when I got to college, something kind of clicked. I'm not sure what happened, but it all came together all at once when I realized that, oh, not only can I listen to a song and kind of hear the harmony, but I also understand like how that harmony translates on the piano. And I guess that means that I can hear a song that I like and play it back. And when that connected, I was just at my piano every night, just playing through music, and it was just very, very exciting.
Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
G'day everyone, it's great to be back with you for another weekly dose of piano teaching inspiration. This is episode 88 of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, and I'd like to extend a special welcome to all my Inner Circle members. Thanks to everyone for tuning in today, wherever you are in the world. I know this is going to be one hell of a fun interview. My name is Tim Topham, and I'm the host of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. This is the place where you can get weekly inspiration, ideas, and teaching strategies to help you be the best piano teacher that you can be. Today's show notes and a full transcript, as usual, are available at timtopham.com/episode88. So I really am excited today to finally welcome on the show a couple of guys who I really should have had on a long time ago, given how much I love their work. Anyone who's been following me for any length of time will probably be familiar with Hook Theory. It's an online resource that I love exploring with my students as part of my approach to teaching pop music. So let's get right to it and find out who's on the call today. Firstly, we've got Ryan Miyakawa. He spends his time between his day job, which is as an optical engineer for Lawrence Berkeley Lab, and his after-hours job as co-founder of Hook Theory. Ryan grew up playing the piano and the French horn and took an early interest in music theory and ear training. Interestingly, Ryan is a synesthete, and I hope I've pronounced that rightly. That's the person that associates colors with musical sounds. I actually taught a student who had this... was in this situation a few years ago. It was really interesting. And Ryan tells an interesting story about Hook Theory's colors that they choose to select scale degrees and the fact that his own colors don't really align. I thought that was kind of interesting. Anyway, the second person on the call today is Chris Anderson. He's an American engineer, scientist, and entrepreneur also based in Berkeley. He is co-founder of Hook Theory and a manager and engineer at the Center for X-ray Optics, where he designs, builds, and operates X-ray optical systems used for science and research. Chris holds a PhD from the University of California at Berkeley in applied science and technology. And I was really surprised by Chris. Chris has a really quirky fact. This is just stand by for this one, right? Chris is a self-confessed super smeller and has been all his life. He smells everything. His mum loves to remind him of how when he was a little kid at daycare, whenever his blanket, which he took everywhere, was buried in a pile of other kids' jackets, he would pick up each thing in turn from the pile, smell it, until he identified his blanket solely by smell. And Chris, I still don't understand why you wouldn't have just looked at the blanket and recognized that it was yours. Welcome to the show, Chris and Ryan.
Thanks for having us. Thanks, Tim. Good to be here.
Interestingly enough, I've got a very acute sense of smell as well, which can be a real problem, actually. Chris, I don't know if you find the same thing. Some people can really just ignore smells that go on around them. It really affects me. Do you find the same?
I do notice what you're talking about, but I just tend to not try to smell those odors. I focus on the good ones.
Well, look, I think it's the first time I've ever started a podcast interview talking about smells. So let's get into the guts of it now. For those, firstly, who don't know about Hook Theory, can you just tell us a quick little bit about it?
Yeah, sure. We're a company that develops software and books that help musicians really learn how to write great chord progressions and melodies. So the books are they're interactive, they're modern, you know, they're on iPad and web, and you know, they're full of rich interactive examples from, you know, today's popular songs everywhere. You know, anybody from like Taylor Swift back to, you know, the Beatles and Bob Dylan. And our software is really designed to help musicians lay out a chord progression and melody based around composing in a scale, helps musicians make smart choices about chords that go well together and how to like either lay a melody on top of an existing chord progression or kind of go the other way. You have a melody, how to fit a chord progression to it. And there's also a huge other part of the website, which is a tab database. We call them theory tabs. And it's you can look up the name of a song and you can see the music theory behind the song.
Yeah, and that's the thing that really hooked me in, literally, no pun intended, into your software. It's absolutely brilliant. We'll get into more of the detail about how it all came about, but I think everyone listening is going to be asking the same question, which I've got in my head, is that how do two optical engineers end up running a music website about pop music?
I think it kind of goes back to the early days of, so Ryan and Dave and I are all like really good friends and we've known each other for maybe a decade, 12 years now. We met in grad school and kind of after we'd known each other a few years, we knew we wanted to try to start a business together. And we had this other business idea that we worked on for a little while that ultimately we didn't love working on. And then we kind of pivoted and took a step back and one thing we all had in common really was with music, specifically Ryan. He's kind of the music theory brain behind Hook Theory. He was just like, what do you guys think about trying to take music theory and reinvent how it's taught and like bring it to the world in a new way? And we got behind that idea and started kind of working on it. And then it just all went from there.
Yeah, pretty much.
So in the early days, actually, we first came up with the very first idea for Hook Theory and the notation that we use, which is sort of like the core thing behind Hook Theory. We didn't know if people would like it or if it would work, but we taught at UC Berkeley, which is where we were in grad school. They have these courses that you can teach, that grad students can teach and like students can take and get credit for. So we called it the theory of popular music. And we taught it and it was just really successful. So we knew we had something. And then we kind of took about another 8 months to build like the beginnings of the Hook Theory website and create the company.
Yeah, right. Who did all the back end kind of coding and database work? Because that would have been pretty considerable, I imagine.
Yeah, so luckily the three of us are all kind of programmers. We do a lot of programming for our day-to-day jobs. And so when we started this project, we all kind of wore many hats, and a lot of that involved lots of the programming back end. So, you know, I think that I had the most kind of music theory background. So I coded a lot of the music theory back end, but Chris was responsible for a lot of the database work and a lot of the front end, and Dave did quite a bit too. So we all helped out.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, your launch story back in, I think it was maybe 2012-ish, said that you'd analyzed 1,300 songs and this is what you found out. We'll put a link to that article in the show notes. How many songs are you up to today? Do you know?
Yeah, so now we're up to around 15,000 songs.
Far out.
Which we're very happy about. And it's we have a lot more data than that 1,300 that we had a few years back. So maybe we'll have to publish an updated version of that article with our new statistics.
And the best part is all the songs after 1,300 weren't contributed by us. So we built a system so anybody in the world can come and analyze a piece of music and put it on the website. And it gets, you know, corrected by the crowd. So that's what's awesome. It's kind of growing on its own.
I was going to ask you about that, whether there's some kind of automatic fashion in which new songs are uploaded, or is it manually done by people who submit, a little bit like Ultimate Guitar chord charts you can put in?
Yeah, so it's very similar to that. So
Or Wikipedia. It's more like Wikipedia because people can edit the same one and correct it. Whereas on Ultimate Guitar, there's like lots of different versions.
That's right. Yep. That makes sense. And so people can do I could do this now with a new song that I hear on the radio.
Yeah. So when we first started out, we didn't know how many people would really be into that. And, when we were developing this course, we were really analyzing most of the songs for the database. But we were really delighted to find that people were really excited about it, sharing the music theory behind their favorite songs. And now we have songs from, you know, soundtracks to movies, to J-pop and K-pop, to some very obscure songs that that we've never even heard of. So, you know, as for us, it's been really exciting to kind of see the breadth of the music that's come out in Hook Theory, and it's really taught us a lot about different types of music as well.
And so for piano teachers who are listening today, what is one of the first things that you would suggest they do if they land on Hook Theory? Let's say they're into open to teaching pop, which and creative kind of approaches to chords and things like that. Where would you recommend they go in their first few steps on your site?
Well, I suppose it kind of depends on what they're interested in and what aspects of popular music theory they want to bring to their own teaching. If they're curious about just the music theory, popular music theory in general, I think a great place to start is just our theory tab database, because there you can kind of explore different songs and take a look at the chords. And I think that, you know, we've talked to some teachers that find that, you know, teaching music theory through popular songs resonates a lot more with the, you know, a younger audience than does music theory from some of the classical pieces that we're used to. You know, if on the other hand, you know, teachers might want a refresher on music theory, maybe they haven't taken music theory in a long time, or they're interested in how music theory specifically relates to popular music and especially in our system, then I would recommend checking out our books, which I think are a very good introduction to that.
Are they ebooks?
Yeah. So there's, and they're available on basically every platform, web, iOS, Android. Ben, they're not currently on Kindle, but we're working on Kindle versions of both books.
And for teachers who are classically trained and have perhaps a limited knowledge of pop and chords and that sort of thing, are those ebooks the kinds of things that will take them through a process of getting better understanding of that?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Totally. I mean, and the one thing, too, is, you know, we are the whole thing about Hook Theory is we don't use traditional music notation. And so, you know, that may not be for everybody. There may be a lot of teachers out there that are, you know, really want to stick with that. And so I'd say, like, reading the book or even just the first chapter of the book, it really walks through our notation and, like, why we have it. And, you know, the teachers will find out, like, do I think this will work for my students or not, you know?
Mm. I certainly love the tab section of your site. It's probably the thing I use the most and recommend the most, particularly the progression builder. I don't know who came up with that idea, but that Ryan, nice job. That interface where you so for those who haven't been on the site, you're going to love this. What it has is on the left-hand side of the page is just a series. You choose a key. So let's say we're in C, and you'll see circles coming out with lines from a center, which is C, to a whole lot of other chords around it. And you can click through a sequence of chords. So let's say a chord progression that goes C to F to G. And as it as you keep clicking, it'll start refining all the songs in their database in a list on the right-hand side. So you can actually see not only the song that uses that chord progression as you build it, but also you can look at it on YouTube, you can listen to it, you can see the melodic movement, the chords, and you can either see the chords as, I don't know what the technical word is, but, you know, C's, G's, or Roman numerals. Unbelievably handy and fun little thing to explore. Do you have any idea whether that's something that a lot of people do use? Is that a popular feature?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is a popular feature. And one thing we should mention is that, so really the way that started was, you know, we had published this article. We were gathering statistics about the chords. And as our database grew bigger and bigger, we realized that there's kind of a wisdom of that database that could conceivably even transcend, you know, a conventional wisdom for chords. In fact, you know, I would consider myself to be kind of a music theory geek, and I follow very closely chord progressions that I find, you know, I really enjoy on the radio and things like that. But the database was teaching me even things where, you know, oh, wow, like, you know, I didn't know that this chord could go to this chord, for instance. And so what we decided was we would essentially assemble all of that data from this public database that everyone contributes, and we would build that tool. So in addition to that trends tool that you're talking about, Tim, we also have integrated that data into our music writing software, HookPad, itself. And for Hook Theory Plus users, they can essentially, as they're writing a chord progression, they can have the software analyze their chord progression and either suggest, you know, what chord would sound good after this, or what chord, if I wanted to replace this C chord because I have too many Cs, what chord might fit in its place. And so in addition to the trends, that also we are also integrating that data into the software itself.
Yeah, that's very, very cool. I haven't had the chance to explore that software so much. I've seen the free version that you've got, which gives you a good overview. And we should say, too, that the tab side of your site is 100% free, right? There's no restrictions on that. So what I think is one of the best resources you've got is still completely free, which maybe that's why you're still working in your engineering jobs. I'm not sure. But thank you very much for allowing us to access that, because it is a really great thing. I'm interested too, Ryan. I think we're probably similar in a way. I love exploring chord progressions, which is why I'm passionate about teaching it to my students. If I hear a song on the radio that sounds really cool, one of the first things I'll do is jump on the piano and try and play it and work out, you know, what is it? What's it about? Is it a first inversion movement? Is it a, you know, some seventh or ninth or whatever? And yeah. It sounds like you're very much the same. Is that where a lot of the genesis from this came from?
Oh, absolutely. I'm exactly the same way. I mean, it started off, I think, earlier when I was younger and playing piano. I was kind of more classically trained, as many of your students may be. But and you know, I would obviously listen to a lot of popular music when I was a teenager, and sometimes there'd just be a song that's like, man, I really have to figure out, you know, what's going on. So I'd go pluck around on the keyboard, but I think as I've grown up, I've evolved one step past that, which is that, you know, when I hear a sound that I really love, I want to then take that and create music with that sound, or I want to, you know, kind of evoke the same emotions that certain sounds kind of evoke in me. And so part of the reason why I think that, you know, we structured Hook Theory to be this kind of what one might call a functional analysis. So using Roman numerals, prioritizing these Roman numerals.
I knew there was a word for it.
to think about the theory is that, you know, it's hard when you just look at chords like C, F, G to really know what's going on. But you know, when you start breaking it down into these Roman numerals and you start learning these patterns that you really like, it's kind of like a toolkit. So when you go to compose your own music, you kind of look into your little bag of tricks and you pull out different ideas that you've learned, you know, different patterns that you might have learned with these Roman numerals. And for me, that's been an extremely rewarding experience in my own songwriting, and also in kind of appreciating songwriting from other people as well.
Mm. It's very, very cool to see how it all works. And look, one of the questions that someone wanted me to ask you, one of my readers, was, is it true that the 1-5-6-4 progression really is the most common pop song chord progression?
Yeah,
did the Axis of Awesome have it right?
So according to our database, yes, the 1-5-6-4 is by far the most popular chord progression, or we should say kind of different combinations, different cycles of that. So for instance, 6-4-1-5 is a very similar progression because it just starts on the 6 instead of the 1. But if you take all of those kind of together, that is by far, at least in modern times, the most well-represented chord progression. But it doesn't mean that if you want to write a popular song that you have to use that progression. And, you know, if you look in our database, you'll see that that a lot of new songs use many other progressions besides that.
Absolutely. And that progression builder, as you say, you can, you know, click on C and then go to something weird like A flat or whatever it is,
yeah,
and choose the weirdest route through your chords. And, you know, you'll find songs that use that somewhere or other, which I always find fun. Interestingly enough, I think it's often the most long lasting pop songs that I've found on your site, the kind of Beatles and ABBAs and, you know, those classics that often have the more interesting chords in them.
Yeah,
would that be your finding as well?
That, you know, it's interesting. I think that it depends a lot on the genre. So for instance, like recently someone analyzed Let It Go, that hit song that your 2-year-old niece is probably singing to you from the music from the movie Frozen, and that actually has some really fantastic chord changes that, you know, I really appreciated. You know, some, and on the other hand, there are some songs, you know, from the 70s, some classic rock songs that are just three chords. So I wouldn't necessarily say that it's a generational thing. It's more a more of a genre thing.
I don't know. I pretty much agree. I don't know. I can't say it any better than that.
Well, there's a lot of piano teachers out there who'll be groaning at remembering when Frozen Let It Go came out and how many kids they had to teach it to. But I wonder how many of them actually explored the chord progression with their students. And so one of the things I'm most passionate about is trying to help teachers see beyond the page and the notes on the page and try and help their students understand its construction. And that's why I feel that pop music is a great inlet into that study because of its repetitive and often straightforward nature. If you can analyze a pop song and understand those chords, then you can start seeing it in other music, even right up to romantic, classical repertoire, modern piano solos, right? So that's why I think you've got such an important role to play for us teachers.
And I would add, too, that the... one thing that's nice about talking about popular music is that oftentimes with students, we can all start from the same place, which is that we all agree that we like this music, right? And so it's useful studying why is it that this sounds good? I think that a lot of times, you know, I had kind of a more formal music training, and the first place that people like to start is with these Bach chorales. And oftentimes when you start with a Bach chorale, especially with someone who, you know, maybe is not a Bach aficionado, it may not be perfectly clear why we're studying these chorales, because ultimately, you know, the student may not want to be producing Bach chorales. But starting by a song that we can all agree sounds great, I feel like is often a great motivating factor for encouraging students to learn about music theory, which is, you know, sometimes can be a tough sell otherwise.
Mm. You mentioned chorales, Bach chorales. I agree. And I learned a lot of hymns when I was young as part of church and as part of school. I don't know, I was at an Anglican school and I was often asked to play things. I have a feeling that that made me a much better reader of harmony and gave me a better understanding of it too. Did you have an experience like that in your piano studies, Ryan?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so I started piano very early, and it was the type of thing where, you know, my parents really wanted me to keep with it. And I was interested in, you know, doing other teenager things besides, you know, spending an hour a day playing the piano. And also I had a teacher that really forced me to learn music theory. And I'm not sure what kind of programs that you guys have there in Australia, but in California, there's a popular program that's sponsored by the Music Teachers Association of California, where kind of yearly we'll go in and have to play kind of a certain number of pieces, and we have to do some ear training and some sight singing, and it's called the Certificate of Merit. And I never at the time really understood why I was learning all this music theory. But when I got to college, something kind of clicked. I'm not sure what happened, but it all came together all at once when I realized that, oh, not only can I listen to a song and kind of hear the harmony, but I also understand like how that harmony translates on the piano. And I guess that means that I can hear a song that I like and play it back. And when that connected, I was just at my piano every night, just playing through music. And it was just very, very exciting. And, you know, I hope that we can help to inspire moments like that among students, because I think it would be a total shame if, you know, people really wanted that, but missed out on it because, you know, the idea of learning a little bit of music theory is, you know, is the initial proposition is a little too dull.
Yeah, I'd like to think that piano pedagogy is shifting into a more modern kind of era. And I'd like to think that some of the conversations that I'm having will help that. Interesting hearing what you said about that all the theory stuff you did at the start didn't really make any sense until you got a bit older. So I wonder if you've got any, have you got any thoughts for teachers, particularly of piano, about how they can make those theory conversations and learning that we know that students should have when they're younger more interesting or more practical or relevant?
Well, that's really what like our two books are like all about completely. I mean, you take this topic, music theory, and you see right away how it can help you understand what it is that you're playing. Go beyond, like you said, the notes on the page to actually understanding like, well, okay, well, what is this? This is a chord progression. And, you know, you can think about here's the melody and here's the chords and how it is, it's actually like tremendously helpful to be able to have this like additional layer on top of it to see the patterns. And I think like seeing the connection of this information connected to songs that you're wanting to play, I think can make it relevant like right away. You don't have to necessarily have the aha moment, you know, later on in life. It's like it can just kind of hit you right then.
Yeah, and I think actually Chris is actually a really good example of this. So Chris is a piano player, he's a guitar player, but I think that there's a lot of analogs. So
do you mean by analogs?
So he was I think that his experience, I think, could translate, you know, very well to a young piano player in the sense that, you know, he, I should, I guess, let you talk about your experience, but Chris is a self-taught musician, essentially.
I play guitar and I think the way I learned guitar is very similar to how most people learn guitar, right? You know, you learn how to hold shapes of chords, you know, and learn chord sequences, and you look up your favorite song and, you know, you learn the chords and you want to play it and sing it to your friends. And that's like the first year or two of guitar for most people. And I, in a way, like, I almost feel like I was kind of the first Hook Theory customer before we even built Hook Theory. Like, I met Ryan, and the first year I met him, I brought my guitar to his house one day and I was just strumming a couple chords. He was like in the other room doing the dishes or something. And he's like, "Oh, play a B minor 7. And I played it and it was like the perfect next chord. And I was like, how did you even know that? I mean,
he really is a geek.
So he started teaching me basically music theory, kind of the Hook Theory way. And it just changed my whole, like everything I knew about music changed. I mean, it just the way I could easily pick up and like hear a song on the radio and quickly play it. My ability to kind of create my own stuff just was immediately transformed by being able to think about music like without respect to it, to a particular key, and actually thinking about the patterns of the chord changes, you know, like you were saying earlier, the CFG, thinking about that, you know, as 1-4-5, and you could play that in any key that you wanted to and it sounds the same.
Yeah, and then to kind of bring this back, actually, I feel like this is, you know, it's interesting because I feel like the experience of guitar players is very exploratory. And I find, at least talking to a lot of, you know, my friends that started on piano, is initially piano can feel not like that. And I think it's because we often learn the piano from music on a page, as opposed to, you know, creating our own sounds by chords. And I think that there's a lot of reasons for that. I mean, there's a lot of coordination with all the fingers and there's a lot of notes to play. So we do need sheet music. But I think that some of my most kind of exciting piano experiences have occurred without any music. And I think that for a lot of piano teachers out there, one thing to consider is teaching students how to create their own music without sheet music. And I think that, you know, I have, you know, so at Berkeley, I was friends with a lot of really incredible pianists. I mean, some people actually went on to play professionally that could not, you know, if I told them, "Oh, play like G, C, D the way that like Tom Petty just did," they couldn't do it. You know, I could write out the most complicated thing and they can play like 100 notes, you know, a second. if it came to just creating the most simple chord progression in a way that, you know, sounds good, they had no idea where to start. And I think that because there's a lot of technique associated with piano, you know, we tend to learn piano in a certain way, but I think that it's important to take a step back and realize that we play music because we enjoy music, and oftentimes we enjoy, you know, creating sounds. And I think that if we could bring more of that exploratory nature, the way that a lot of guitarists have, to piano, I think that we could really improve the learning experience.
Nicely said. You've pretty much summed up everything that I do and believe in one little 2-minute block. Nice work. Yeah, I mean, you're right on the money. I taught myself guitar many years ago and have written a blog post about what learning guitar taught me about piano and how I teach it. And I think you're right. Guitarists within a month of learning are singing and playing along with themselves. Why on earth aren't we? And so I'm a big advocate of that no book approach for the first weeks of lessons with any kid. And I've actually produced a course all about it. So we'll put a link in the show notes. That's called my No Book Beginners course, which pretty much does exactly that. Gets creative, improvising, singing, moving, all that kind of stuff. That's what it's about. And it gives you a much better foundation too than, of course, getting out of sheet music and learning how to read middle C. That's my opinion. So nice to hear that as well from you. I wonder if you had, Ryan, just a couple of things that you would, if you were teaching little Ryan today.
Little Ryan.
what are a couple of things that you would now do that you would like to have receive as a student?
When I first started piano as a very young child, nobody told me that. I'm kind of embarrassed to admit this, but I remember kind of hearing a song that I liked and trying to kind of pluck along to it. And I was almost embarrassed because I thought that someone would think that I'm copying, you know, this music. That it was so ingrained in me that, you know, your teacher gives you some music and you're supposed to play it like it was supposed to be played. And I think that I'm not exactly sure the best way to articulate this to a young kid, but the idea of using piano is kind of your creative palette. It's not the instrument as a means to reproducing work. It's your toolkit for creating your own ideas, or it can be. And so I would have told myself, you know, go ahead and pluck along to that song. There's no shame in playing something that you're not supposed to be practicing. Just whatever you want to play, you should be playing. So yeah, I guess that would be it.
Yeah, nice. I like it. And I think one of the other things that we often have as teachers are students who learn things online, learn things on YouTube by copying what's going on there. And it frustrates a lot of teachers because they're not actually sure what to do with the student when they come in having done that. And I'm a person that realizes that, well, if I have trouble with something, I'll go on YouTube and learn how to do it, if it's a business thing or an online problem I've got. So why on earth wouldn't we be encouraging students to do the same thing, as long as it's in a mix of other things that we're doing? So I'm right with you, as you can tell. All right. Well, look, I'm interested to wrap it up with a few final questions. Firstly, what's the most unusual thing you've learned about pop music in this whole process?
Let's see. Unusual thing about pop music.
That's actually a tough question.
Well, here's what I'll say. One of the most unusual things that I think that we've learned from creating Hook Theory and with interacting with our users is really the vast number of people that that have really resonated with the idea of learning kind of music the Hook Theory way, learning with these Roman numerals. I think we didn't really know what to expect when we first started. We thought, oh, maybe we'll get some like kind of singer-songwriter types that are interested in writing, like, you know, a song for their girlfriend or boyfriend. But we really have a very broad range of people. We have, you know, these super music theory geeks that are splitting hairs over like whether like this chord, like in this particular very obscure song, you know, like has like the ninth or not. We have those guys. Then we have like these producers of electronic dance music that use Hook Theory because in this digital age, we can create a lot of music on our computer and we don't even need instruments. So we have users that don't even play instruments that are creating music completely on their computers and are using Hook Theory to gain knowledge of chords in that way. And then we have total beginners that are just, you know, trying to poke around. So I think that one of the things that has really struck me is how broadly applicable all these ideas are. And no matter what type of music you're into or what stage of music you're into, I think that really knowing the fundamentals of music theory can really improve both your appreciation of music and your ability as a songwriter.
And I was just being on your webpage actually and having a look at some of the things you have to offer. So for those interested, head to hooktheory.com and you can actually scroll just a tiny bit down the page and you'll see five main categories of products. So you've got your Hook Pad music software, which you can trial. And then that's a paid product, I believe. You've got your interactive how-to books, which we've been talking about today. You've got the tabs, that's my favorite thing to explore. Completely free, great fun to use with students, particularly teenagers and adults, I find. You've got chord and melody dictation. So what's that about?
Yeah. So the basic way that works is you go to the page, you load it up, you can choose beginner, intermediate, or advanced. And say you choose beginner, you are given a melody. I believe it's just a melody on beginner level, played on a piano. And then you try to dictate it into software. So you figure out what scale degrees of the scale they are, and you put them in. You can, I think on the beginner level, you can play and actually hear what you're putting in. And so it's a tool for ear training. And then at the next level, you get a melody and a chord progression. You actually, on that level, you can't hear as you're putting them in. So it's a little trickier.
And are these notes on the stave or notes into your interface?
So notes into our interface. Yep. Yeah, exactly. We view that as it's a very kind of experimental kind of beta part of the site that's we kind of built a couple of years ago as like, oh, maybe people will really like this. It's an area that we want to, in the future, I think, develop out a lot more. We think there's a lot of potential to make a great product kind of around that. Yeah. I don't know if you want to comment anymore, Ryan.
Oh yeah, no, just I think that obviously ear training is a very important part of musicianship, and we definitely want to expand into that space in the future.
Mm.
We should also mention that our software Hookpad actually is free as well, so you should check that out. We have kind of a pro version that you can pay for that unlocks some additional features, but all the basic functionality, if you want to compose songs in our notation. As Chris said, the software kind of gives you help by suggesting chords in the scale. All of that is completely free, and we have thousands of users creating songs every day with that software.
Brilliant. Thanks for the correction there. And the last section you've got is Hook Theory for Teachers, which says teaching models and assessment kits for teachers and schools. Were you able to just give us a quick rundown of what to expect in there for teachers?
Yeah, that's right. So the essential model is it's an easy way for a teacher to get our first book, Hook Theory 1, which teaches kind of the introductory beginner music theory concepts. You can get that for all of your students, as well as you can build your own exercises around our Hookpad music composition interface. So you could and assign them to your students, and then your students do them online and you can grade them and all the expected stuff. But, you can say, like, you could seed, a melodic line and say, build a 3-chord progression that fits this melody. And then every student could come and do that, and you could see what they do. So it gives you this, like, kind of open canvas for creating these actually pretty awesome exercises for your students to do and to help introduce, music theory and assess their knowledge of music theory. And the template for creating the exercise is pretty much completely open-ended. So you get an open field to write a text prompt. You can put a seed, we call it like a seed, into the music interface. So you can seed it with a chord progression or a melody, or just leave it totally blank. Yeah. And it's great. And students can also work on something, over time. Like if, they can work on a project over a while and kind of turn it in at a later date.
It sounds like it could work for groups or individual or classroom as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, nice work. Well, look, it's amazingly comprehensive. You've grown and developed so many more products since I first found you back in whenever it was. Was it 2012-ish? Yeah.
Yeah.
Or 2010? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's great to see how you've developed and the interface has improved and all that kind of stuff. I do have one question for you, though, that I get asked all the time. When do you know what it's going to be?
Yeah, very soon. We are.
Hang on. You better tell us what the question was.
The question is, when will it be available on iPad, and when will it be off of Flash?
Correct.
Yeah. So within 2017, I think is a very firm, solid answer. We're working like super hard on a new version of our music notation, and it's going to be fantastic. And we're kind of rewriting it from scratch. We're adding everything we've ever dreamed of adding. So it's going to be the ultimate software and experience. So we're pretty excited about it.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And I gather last question too, you guys are still working. You've got a third partner who's not on the call, who has left his job. Is he now working kind of full-time in the business? And what's your future looking like in regard to that? Are you going to continue with the engineering stuff and do this on the side, or how's it all going to work, do you think?
So actually we're all three of us are still, we still have full-time engineering jobs outside of this. The other third person, Dave, he's at Intel. And, you know, I think TBD, you know, the business side of Hook Theory is growing exceptionally well, actually. And, yeah, there may be a point when it's a really obvious decision that, hey, like we need to go all in on this. We've been able to kind of keep a decent pace with innovating new features and new products with Hook Theory at our current like part-time rate.
Mm.
But it's unclear at this point. I mean,
yeah, I'll put you on the spot. Yeah, I appreciate your honesty with all that. And look, congratulations on how well everything's been going. Great to see. And I'm really glad that it is growing and people are supporting you. So that we can continue seeing what amazing things you're going to be doing in the future too. So for teachers interested to find out more, head to hooktheory.com and you'll be able to find out everything that we've been talking about. I'll put some links in our show notes today for a couple of the articles that I've written about these guys and suggested uses in the piano studio. That'll all be at timtopham.com/episode88. So Chris and Ryan, thank you very much again for your time today. Did we forget anything? Is there any final comments or suggestions, words, anything we missed?
No, just thanks for having us. Yeah. And we, you know, I think it's really great what you're doing, and happy to help you out or be a part or come on anytime.
Brilliant. I really appreciate that. It's great to have finally made the connection. I'm glad we've made the time today. So thank you guys both very much for joining me today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Tim.
All right, see you later.
Ladies and gentlemen,
that will conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon Piano Podcast for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.